So it's 4th down and 8. After you get to the Green Bay 49, Williams chase, throws, and it's caught at the 30-yard line. Roma Dunze on a 4th and 8. Keeps it going.
I mean, are you kidding me? This is why when Caleb Williams was coming out of USC, it was plays like this that made everybody go, this guy's just one of one as far as his abilities. Think about it.
He is taking that pitch now over and over.
Deep drive to right. Going back is Tucker. Get out the tape measure. Long gone. Pete Crow Armstrong. A two-run homer. Cubs lead 5-1.
And when you take pitches like that off the plate away, it forces the pitcher to come back on the plate. Home run number 2 for Pete in the ballgame. And this one, about a third of the way up the video board and right.
You tell her, Baby T. Baby, I'm a star. By the artist himself. Dearly departed Prince. I'm Anthony Herron. This is Chicago Sports Radio 104.3 The Score. I'm taking you up to Chicago Sky Basketball on The Score. Zach Zabin, Layla Rahimi will be on the call for the Sky. And I had Tyler play those cuts because I think that we're in the midst right now of watching guys who had star level expectations as they joined up with these historic Chicago sports franchises, and each pretty immediately delivered to some extent, but now they're both taking things into the stratosphere. Now we haven't watched Caleb enter the 2026 season with the Bears yet, just to see what that next level for him might be. But both of them at the age of 24, and for PCA, there was one what felt like fairly obvious bugaboo in his game during his rookie season that we're now seeing him correct in a rapid manner. And very similar to Bears quarterback Caleb Williams, the remarkably big bugaboo that he had during his rookie season with the Bears that is now gone about being corrected in his second season. For PCA, it was, of course, the chase rate. The fact that he would just swing at any and everything, and frequently enough, he'd make contact and make some big things happen. And so I already, and I know a lot of you have begun to do it as well, had begun to sort of categorize Pete Crow Armstrong as this latest example of a really exciting Chicago baseball talent, similar to Javi Baez, that was great for a highlight reel play, whether it was in the batter's box or defensively, and giving people fits on the base paths. And so that would be fun and exciting and perhaps even MVP caliber. But there wasn't necessarily a version of PCA that I was confident he would achieve that would be able to refine his approach at the plate in the way that he has. For Caleb Williams, a very similar conversation could be had about what was seen from Caleb as a rookie to Caleb in his second season, because there were plenty of exciting moments and late game dramatics that showed up where the obvious talent was on display for Caleb. But he took 68 sacks as a rookie, a Bears record. He was on pace to shatter the NFL record at one point before you get through those final few games and he takes a few less sacks closing out that 2024 season. But in both cases, a guy who has this sort of wild approach at the plate, but is able to be successful enough and showed more power, did PCA right away, to make it seem like, all right, this is something that you can sort of work with, perhaps not necessarily work through or improve upon drastically, but there's a version of Pete Crow Armstrong that could still be highly effective despite chasing things out of the zone, despite having such limited patience at the plate. But because of all these tools that he possessed, the tracking ability on defense and the playmaking there as a center fielder who could cover up whenever necessary for various teammates in the outfield and at times even in the infield. So defensively off the charts, but then even at the plate, at the big league level, more power than most people anticipated. And then what he does on the base paths, just constantly making the pitcher uncomfortable, making the catcher nervous for what he'd be able to do. He's a playmaker. So with that being that version of PCA, and even in the first half of the 2025 season, thinking, you know what? If you get that first half of 2025 version of PCA that's chasing all over the place, but can knock the ball out of the park and give people fits on the base pass, we're good. Just do that consistently. Don't fall off the cliff like he did towards the end of that season. The version of Caleb Williams from his rookie year. If you got that version of Caleb with more refinement, with a better run game, with a better offensive philosophy, continuing to limit turnovers. He didn't throw interceptions as a rookie, let alone the ability to find the end zone with his arm and his legs. You would still have a quarterback that could win a lot of games in the NFL. And when you're looking at the way that Pete Crow Armstrong has been able to refine his approach in the batter's box, there are so many people, and a lot of baseball writers might not even admit it, but the respect that folks have for Pete Crow Armstrong because of his chase rate, you know, his walk rate has gone from 4.5 in the previous season to now over 11, having more walks right now in this individual year than he did combined in 2024 and 2025. And that number only continuing to improve, and it's the reason that he's now being viewed by many as the front runner for MVP. But you don't always see guys, even players that are as talented as Pete Crow Armstrong, who can improve their approach and have it feel as refined as it has up to this point in the season. And there are ways that baseball players improve. Their plate discipline can improve. But someone who was so wild early in his career to get to this point, this level of refinement, it reminds me so much of what we saw from Caleb Williams comparing his rookie season to his second season, that first year with Ben Johnson in 2025, because guys who take sacks tend to just be guys who take sacks. Russell Wilson constantly took sacks, even as he made multiple Super Bowls with the Seahawks. We're just still fresh off the heels of watching Justin Fields take dozens and dozens of sacks as he held the ball throughout his time with the Bears and continues to do so in the NFL. He's made a bunch of plays, but guys who take sacks tend to just be guys who take sacks, and you find their way around how they continue to make plays despite holding the football, despite having limited pocket presence. But that growth, that development that we saw Caleb Williams make last year, a lot of credit to Ben Johnson, there's no doubt about that, but it's really striking, that development from Caleb himself to be able to do that. We'd love to hear directly from guys who've been around this, guys who've been evaluating this. Let's do that a little bit right now as well. Ian Happ was actually on The Score just yesterday talking about the walk rate of his teammate, Pete Crow Armstrong. He was on with Raheemy Harrison Grody yesterday talking about PCA.
Generally, when you see something like a change that a player makes, it's a process, and it's a like, oh, he's developing this, a skill. It wasn't like that. It was like this. It was like one day. It was like he just went from not walking to walking, and it just happened like literally it was a day in, I don't know, June, mm-hmm. that I think he got a little bit closer to the plate against lefties, and maybe it was like that small tweak, but it was like he went from a dude who, he's a great player and he's going to swing and miss a little bit and he's going to chase some stuff out of the zone to like, he's going to walk twice a game for the rest of the season. You're like, what, how did this, where did, where'd you figure this one out?
So you're just as amazed as I was.
Somebody got to him.
Yeah, I was like, the difference between the quality of at bat is just like, holy, like it is. Every time he goes up there, it's a deep count. He's fouling off pitches. He's spitting on just really good left-handed sliders just off the plate. Fastballs just off the plate. It's like, I didn't see it coming. Like, I thought he would always be a great player. I thought he would always be a dude that walks 5 or 6% of the time and hits 30 plus bumps, and the average is going to dictate his on base. And then it just, like, one day, because it's not an easy skill to develop. It's like, generally the guys that come into the league and walk 8 to 10% can end up at 10 to 12 to 14. Like that, like that's general. If you can walk early in your career, you can get a little bit better at it. You can understand when the pitches that you foul off, and maybe you cover one pitch a little bit better to get deeper in counts. And that's generally how it works. Guys that come in with 3 to 5% walk rates don't generally jump to 15. It's not what you see. And he's been able to do that. And I think it is a little bit of an approach change and kind of where he's looking. But it happens so fast. Like if you would have told me, like, hey, Pete gets from a 5 to an 8 this year walk rate, I'd be like, okay, yeah, that's unbelievable. And that'll completely change his game. And then maybe over the course of the next 5 years, it goes from 8 to 12 as he slugs more and becomes more respected, and guys are pitching him out of the zone constantly because they're afraid of the slug. But it literally went from 3 to 15.
Wow.
Like this. And I was like, whoa. And it's made him elite. And that's the difference. The difference between the player is that when you are on base that much with what he does on the base paths, that's the 900 OPS, and that's the, like, totally elite MVP caliber player. It's pretty impressive.
Love how much Ian Happ is on the station and has been for years now, and his willingness, and, you know, he'll talk about himself and his approach and all those things too. But when you get Ian Happ talking about some of his teammates as well, and especially when there are some things that he gets a chance to glow about, and he'll go into granular detail on some of these things. It's fun to hear him kind of nerd out on the baseball aspects of a player, a teammate like PCA, and what we're watching from this young, really young specimen still, because he's still in the infancy of his development. How much better can PCA continue to get? Because none of it is guaranteed, but you also hear from so many folks, whether it's Nico on the station, Ian Happ on the station, Craig Counsell on the station, the approach that Pete Crow Armstrong has taken, even after signing the extension, the approach he's taken to continuing to try and work at his craft, finding what routine suits him best throughout a long baseball season. And Caleb Williams himself, now a couple of years into his NFL career, going into season 3. And Caleb and Pete, you know, you see them at times around town together, social media together, going to different events, hanging out. And that's really a fun idea, just as a fan of Chicago sports also, to see these two young stars vibing together, connecting together in this way, and what they may mean for the future of sports in this city. And Caleb himself, we heard from him about the sack numbers, because taking 68 sacks as a rookie, more than any Bear ever has before, there was a lot of concern. You wonder, not only can he grow out of that, but how much could that impact his confidence? How much could that potentially break such a young, confident player? But then you get to year 2 and he takes only 24 sacks. That type of remarkable improvement, and going from 5.1% with his sack rate after being 10.8 as a rookie. Those are numbers that you just can't argue with in the ways that his game has continued to refine. That refinement really showing up for Caleb. And he was on the station and he was talking last week as he addressed the media as a whole about the way he's gone about improving his ability to avoid sacks.
Caleb, your sack total came way, way down last year. Independent of the play caller and the improved protection, what was your interpretation of how you got better in that area of reducing that number?
Yeah, getting the ball out, and whether it's making a guy miss, throwing the ball away, dirting it sometimes. I know sometimes it may not look like that, but dirting it sometimes. I had a couple of those today. Just getting the ball on my hands and dirting it, saving it for the next play. Just trying to play smart football. And then other than that, just – been better at, you know, when I lose my feed or, you know, something happens and the coverage isn't there, O-line maybe, you know, a little leaky or so, just find a check down and get those guys the ball, have more positive plays, even though the play maybe not be designed to go to that person, on check downs and things like that, have more positive small plays. So that's a part of the goal this year.
Baby T, I don't know, you know, from your perspective, when you think about the Caleb and PCA comparison there, but to me, these are two real specific areas that a lot of times athletes, whether in baseball or in football, you don't necessarily see guys able to improve at the rate that each of them has, but that to me is as great a sign as any for what the future might hold.
I think, too, the other thing that we didn't necessarily gloss over, but we talk a lot about Ben Johnson being the guy in Caleb Williams' ear to kind of guide him and tell him what to do. We should give the same amount of credit to Craig Counsell for the development of Pete Crow Armstrong, because a lot of the times you see him going through these at-bats, who knows what Counsell has told him throughout his career. He's probably seen and done a lot of the same things. He was an older ball player coming into the MLB, so I definitely think having those voices of reason helps. But to your point, at like the rejoin clips coming in, there is something about the way that both of these two guys, they have that it factor that you can't coach. So it always starts out with just these guys are naturally just great gifted athletes.
They command the stage. They're comfortable in the spotlight. And what better sports city than Chicago to have a couple of guys like this who are ascending at the same time, just in unison on these parallel paths, who seem to be on their way to reaching the height of their powers. And watching this play out in real time, it's a fun conversation to have. And the results are already there for both of them. Caleb entering year three, PCA in the midst of his third season at the major league level. Who knows, man? Maybe Pete wins an MVP in baseball, and then later this year, can Caleb win an MVP in football? Who knows, man? The sky's the limit. The sky is the limit. Bears training camp going on right now, and it's a little different right now than it used to be from a training camp perspective. I wonder how many of you guys have made it out there to Halas. I wonder how often in the past Tyler Farragut has made it out to Bears training camp. But things are different. I don't know if it's a positive or a negative, if it's a missed opportunity. I'll tell you what I mean next on The Score.
We're back with more Anthony Herron on 104.3 The Score.
It's a really busy week for me last week. And that's usually the way my wife views it, is that's kind of the official start of my football calendar, basically. Once we get to the point where Big Ten Media Days is going on, and it was here in Chicago this year. And actually, the last time it had been at the Hilton Chicago was when we had just launched Big Ten Radio with SiriusXM. And Kevin Warren was still the commissioner of the Big Ten. At that point, he was really early in his time as Big Ten commissioner. Actually, that first year, I think it was even Jim Delaney was still the commissioner, and then Kevin Warren hadn't taken over yet with the Big Ten. But between Big Ten Media Days for a few days in Chicago last week, and then having a Bears training camp coverage with NFL Radio for a couple of days up at Halas, and then I hit the road over the weekend, went to Green Bay, Wisconsin, and called an IFL playoff game, the Indoor Football League, got a broadcast package with Yahoo Sports. So on the road in Green Bay, which is a nostalgic spot for me because a lot of my rookie year, I was on the practice squad with the Packers, and you know, bought my wife's engagement ring, proposed to her while we were there in Green Bay. So it was a full week of football activities and interviews, and it's a great way, like Media Day is a great way for me to be able to download a lot of the initial information, getting to meet with all the head coaches and the players that they bring with them there and doing interviews all throughout the day, like 7 to 8 hours of coverage on a daily basis for Media Days doing that. So it's a lot, but it's also just a great way to kind of get that initial foray into what the coaches are looking for this coming season and how the players are feeling about things. And you'd be surprised just in some of those conversations. Yes, there's a lot of coach speak and there's a lot of media training and preparation and trying to deliver the right message and everything else. But, you know, body language matters and comfort matters and how they sort of spin different yarns and stories. Those things matter. And of course, the Big Ten, you know, winning the last three college football playoff national championships with three different teams pulling that off between Michigan and Ohio State and Indiana. And the fact that Indiana was this third and most recent team to do it, yeah, that just kind of goes to show where the Big Ten is at as a conference and the dominance that is there, despite everything that Lawrence's almighty Southeastern Conference is trying to spin down there about how the Big Ten is making things happen. In the end, proof's in the pudding. Results are there. Big Ten is up for world domination. But so having those few days with the Commissioner Tony Petitti and the Big Ten Conference and seeing them for a few days and then hitting Bears training camp and going up to Hallis and getting to do that. And we played a few cuts from the conversation with Caleb Williams. I was struck on the way to Hallis Hall. And Bears training camp has been at Hallis Hall for years at this point. But I mentioned nostalgia and thinking about my rookie year being in Green Bay. And so it was fun to go back and do that. But from a nostalgic perspective, one of the things that I think the NFL, an adjustment the league has made that operationally makes a lot of sense, but it still does feel like, man, a little bit of that old school vibe is lost by the fact that the majority of teams around the National Football League, they don't hit the road for training camp. They don't take their players away somewhere and sequester them on some tiny little meager college campus somewhere whose facilities are largely upgraded because the NFL and having some team in their region showing up and taking over their facility. That's how it used to be. That's what the majority of the NFL used to do. Now there's only six teams in the NFL that actually still hit the road and take their team away somewhere to kind of sequester them away from their headquarters for training camp. It's the Buffalo Bills, the Dallas Cowboys, the Kansas City Chiefs, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the Indianapolis Colts. Actually, that's five. So yeah, I guess maybe there's just five teams who do it then. Oh, did I mention? Yes, I think I mentioned all five. But either way, the Colts, I'm going to be at Colts camp this coming weekend. But the Cowboys go all the way to California, out to Oxnard, for their training camp. The Colts don't go that far away from Indy, but they go far enough where they have the players sleeping in a different facility and practicing in a different facility than what they do during the regular season. This will be the last year the Colts end up doing that. But when you think about it, they're like my rookie year when I was in Detroit, my first training camp. We used to go to Saginaw Valley State. Steelers still go to St. Vincent College in Latrobe, Pennsylvania. And my second year in Detroit was when they built the new facility. The Lions built the facility in Allen Park. And so training camp started being right there close to home. Now, they'd still put us in a hotel for like a week or so in training camp, even though we were there at home anyway. But they still wanted that feeling of being sequestered. And the thought behind it is basically team building coming through shared pain. The discomfort that's there from not getting to sleep in your own bed and being fully engrossed in football for at least those initial couple of weeks of training camp. You go up, you're in a dorm room or a hotel, it's not the facility you're accustomed to. It's not the sleeping arrangements that you usually like. And you just get yourself, get your players, get your positions away from the rest of the world. Now, with social media and everything the guys have access to now, it's difficult to avoid the rest of the world. But I do think there was some benefit to that. The benefit to the fans was that it made it easier for teams around the league to feel like they could just let folks come out there and kind of run amok at an NFL practice, which was odd. And you didn't get that at any point during the regular season or the postseason. But during training camp practices, you got the opportunity to just let fans come out there on some random college campus somewhere and stand out there and just watch teams prepare for the season, to watch guys compete, to watch them bleed and sweat, to watch them yell and curse, watch them vomiting all over the place. It's a lot of unsavory stuff that you see at a training camp practice. But it used to be an experience That used to be the, you know, like think of spring training in baseball. Like the sport of baseball still does it, the majority of the sport. You go out there and you watch teams go through things. Now, there's not the physical travails for spring training in baseball. Guys aren't having full body cramps. There's no ice buckets necessary after you finish with a spring training baseball practice. But there is still that feeling of being sequestered, and you get everybody away and you have this common goal and this common cause. I don't know how many of you guys actually missed that. I don't know, Tyler, I don't know if you have you spent much time in years past. Did you make it a point to go out to training camp and try to get, you know, autographs from your favorite players? Because right now the Bears have 10 open practices. There's 10 opportunities for fans to come out there to Halas and actually watch the Bears practice, as opposed to, you know, back in the day, you go out to Bourbonnais and, you know, you could go out there pretty much every day. And the players would sign autographs the majority of those days. And you got to be a part of things. That feeling was there. Was that something you ever did much of, Tyler?
You know what, Ant? I actually have never made it out to Bears training camp. And it's honestly, I kind of regret it. Me and my friends were supposed to go a couple years ago, but things never materialized and we never ended up going.
Well, and now, you know, now you've joined the dark side. Now you're part of the media, so now it'll probably feel different even going to Bears training camp.
Oh, it would feel very different for sure.
I don't know, man. I was talking about nostalgia, just thinking about just how different some of these things are versus what they used to be and how that might feel for some of you out there. And that was kind of on my mind, just where now going to Halas, the Bears get the opportunity to utilize their own training rooms and, you know, all their own meeting rooms and film sessions that they want to try and achieve. Everything else, the creature comforts of Halas Hall are constantly available to them. So it legitimately is a more sensible way to go about training camp, just to make sure you're going to have the guys at the peak of their performance as the season approaches. But it does feel to me like, all right, something, a little something somewhere is lost in that idea of how you build the intangibles and the bond that can be there from a team, because you're not forced into these uncomfortable spaces and circumstances that they used to force us into for an NFL training camp. I miss it personally. Now, I don't miss having to be out there. I don't miss, you know, being on the field, cramping up. I don't miss, you know, seeing double and seeing triple and two-a-day practices and all that. But just the idea behind it, there was something special about it. Something special about the football season kicking off here. It's a fun show we had tonight. My thanks to Patrick Finley for joining me. My thanks, of course, to Tyler Farengold as well on the ones and twos for me throughout the evening. We're getting back to the point where you're going to hear me a lot more on The Score with the football season upon us. My thanks to all of you. Appreciations and salutations. Chicago Sky Basketball is next on Chicago Sports Radio, 104.3 The Score.